The Bake Off Review with 2015 contestants Sandy Doherty and Betty's Cookery School.
So very, very exciting today. We are having our first Bake Off Review and I've been joined by two lovely ladies in the studio. I have Sandy Doherty. Hello, Sandy.
Hello there.
And I also have Lisa from Betty's Cookery School. Hello, Lisa.
Hello.
Now, both of you love baking for different reasons. Lisa, you are known for Betty's. You help people in the cookery school cook all kinds of fabulous things. Sandy, you're a contestant in last year's Bake Off 2015. So both of you have a severe love for baking.
We do.
I ask, did you watch The Great British Bake Off last night?
Yes, it was compulsory. Yeah. I think it was compulsory.
Would have been very disappointed if one of you had been like, nah, I missed it.
No, definitely not going to happen.
So it was week one yesterday. Sandy, you have been in week one. You have done that, walk into the tent. How can you possibly explain how those people were feeling?
If they felt anything like I did, you are so unaware of the millions of people that we were watching it. You are just dealing with the moment. And you are raring to go. You've practiced, you've rehearsed. It's very relaxed. It's very friendly. So the tension is created afterwards, I think, you know, with the music and the, you know, the kids come round and Mel and Sue come round and Paul and Mary wander around. But it isn't like it shows on the television. It's a lot more relaxed than that.
It's not as scary.
No.
Okay. No. So what did we think of last night's episode then? How do we think they chose, it was a cake theme. What do we think about the theme?
Well, I'm fascinated. I'm delighted with the, just talking to Lisa, and delighted with the challenges, because I was beginning to wonder as to just how bizarre the challenges could get. You know, were there going to be things that we all want to go home and make? Because that's the idea. We all want to leave the show and go bake. And I wondered where it could go, but as Paul said last night, he's peeled it right back and gone right back to those basics. But as Lisa will tell you, they've got to be good.
Absolutely.
They've got to be good. But I like it. I like it very much.
What did you think, Lisa?
I totally agree. I think what it shows is your underpinning knowledge. You know, things get bizarre and quite creative as the programme goes on. But week one, can you make a basic cake? Can you make a lemon drizzle? Can you make your Genoese? And you could definitely see last night, it really kind of unravelled a few of them. So they've either gone home and practiced quite severely going through some basic books in the next couple of weeks. But I think underpinning knowledge, as it suggests, you have to put something underneath to build on top. If you can't get a basic sponge underneath, that's where people start to struggle. So I totally agree. And I saw it on Twitter. I was like, brilliant. Let's see where baking can take you. This is the beginning of Bake Off.
What if there's people who are thinking, well, hang on, I wouldn't actually know the most basic sponge. What do you mean by basic sponge? How would people do the best basic sponge they
Victoria's
can do?
Victoria's
basic. And I wouldn't even poo-poo an all-in-one Victoria sandwich if it gets you going. I think anything to get you going, the most simplest of form, then you create, then you build on that, you know, start with a scone, start with a cup, start with a bun rather than a cupcake, you know, and work on it. Then the creativity will come, then the flavours will come. Get your pastry right, get your sponge right.
Okay. Lisa, have you noticed a difference? Because the Bake Off has been big for quite a while now, but particularly over the past couple of series. Love for baking, have you? Because you see people in the cookery school every single day.
Absolutely.
Has that changed at all?
I just think it's really brought it home. You know, I know I was lucky enough to be, you know, standing next to my mum and my grandma and baking, and there was a gap for a while. You know, people got busy, and all of a sudden we've fallen back in love with food, and certainly the Bake Off has generated that. But I think the other reason we love Bake Off is we love the people, we love the journey. The Bake Off's not a programme about teaching, it's about learning to fall in love with food and the people, and that's what we see at the cookery school. People want to have a nice day, they want
they
to enjoy their baking,
they
want to be thrilled with what they've done, and they want to think, I can do this, it shouldn't be out of anybody's reach.
I think I have to sort of step in there and sort of say, you know, people watch Bake Off because it's ordinary people. I mean, quite honestly, there's nobody more ordinary than me. there's nobody more just person next door, the and that's the tent, and that's what it is. And people sort of say, I can do that. I can do that. You know, somebody paid me a very sort of backhanded compliment, really, and it's more or less, well, you know, you were there, and it was much a case of, well, if Sandy can do it, I can do it, which I think actually was a compliment.
Definitely.
I think it was
yeah.
meant as one.
Hey, definitely.
But that's it.
So let's have a bit of an in-depth look then at who these ordinary people are that are yeah. suddenly cast into the world of the Great British Bake Off. You've got a lovely list going here.
We have. Let's, I have to start with Celesi. I mean,
yes.
the man's like velvet, and like I decided last night, is the Gregory Paul.
The Bake Off Review with 2015 contestants Sandy Doherty and Betty's Cookery School. Hear the full version at strayfm.com.
The young kids, I like the age range. We're talking creative, we're talking steadfast, but without being ageist, you could have somebody of an older generation being massively creative and somebody young having quite a lot of knowledge, you know? They could have learnt it from their mum. There might have been one of those cases that somebody slipped through the net and this mother was at home baking. So, you know, blessing Michael and Tom.
Is one of them 19? Is someone
yeah,
who's very young?
Yes, yeah.
And that's the usual one. That's Andrew, I think.
That's Andrew,
yeah.
And they are just so I don't want to mother them, really. Bless them.
Did you find you did that? If there were younger people in there, did you feel yourself sort of becoming mother in the kitchen?
I was very sort of tactile towards them. You know, Tamal I just hugged because he just did. You know, Alvin was very... I do some hypnotherapy as well as part of another one of my jobs. And I was doing all this hypnotherapy in the back room and... lots of sports massage and things like that.
Did you hypnotise Paul or Mary?
No, I tried.
Ah, oh, shame. Okay.
That's going to watch. No. But yeah, definitely. I totally agree. There's something for everybody, isn't there? And, you know, you want to champion people who are trying things for the new times. I think you see people bring new ingredients from new backgrounds, things you wouldn't believe are putting together. So even as a tutor, they try ingredients and think, well, I've not heard of that ingredient. There's things sometimes you don't always hear about in your cookery. So the Bake Off also brings up, but there is literally a real good breadth of capabilities, characters. You know, I like to see that unfold, certainly, as the weeks go on. So, yeah.
There was one ingredient I don't think anyone had heard of. Is it a yozo or gozo?
This cross between a lime and a lemon.
That's the one, yeah.
Yuzu.
Something like that. Have either of you heard of a yuzu?
Yeah.
I have.
Again, I think it's a funky ingredient. Maybe that's used quite... but if you've got something that tastes like a lime and a lemon, I might use a lime and a lemon.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but yeah. I think it is about introducing something different sometimes. But yeah, I think there was a few of those, and there was a tea, wasn't there, that was used.
So
chai tea,
yeah.
I mean, there's lots of tea infusions being put into food, and I've seen that massive. That is a huge trend. I think look out for that. Loads of things are going to be influenced with tea and things like that going on. So there's lots of things. But there is a real good characters. You don't get to see too much on week one, I don't think.
No,
but...
you don't. You don't. This, you've got to remember, I mean, first of all, I thought that lime and a lemon, I thought that was that new taxi firm, but that's Uber, isn't it?
Yeah.
Uber. But you've got 12 people in an hour. You don't get those personalities. You know, it's as you move through. But on saying that... You know, you've got to be punchy right from the start, because if you're not going to be in for very long, and you don't know whether you're going to be in for very long, you have got to be your best, your most sparkling for the television, because, you know, Paul and Mary are judging bakers, Love Production are making television, and there's got to be that combination. You've got to make a good show.
Yeah.
So you've got to sort of come up with your... You can't go far from the brief, or as Lisa will tell you, you know, when a Madeira cake's a Madeira cake, it's a Madeira cake. You know, you put chocolate in, it's no longer a Madeira cake, it's a chocolate cake. So if something's not broke, you don't necessarily fix it, but you've got to adapt it to make it personal, to make it unique.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the skill in keeping to a brief, but being exciting.
Maybe that's somewhere where some of the mistakes had happened last night. They were trying with something quite traditional like a lemon drizzle and putting things in to stand out, but did it stand out for the right reasons? Not necessarily. Yeah. Some things don't fit just because you want to do something
different. Too far out. I think the Michael, bless him, with his chai tea and things like that, I think maybe he just went a bridge too far, you know?
Well, if we have a look at what the three things, warning, this is spoiler alert. If you haven't actually watched it and you don't want to know that they're making, just turn it down for a little second. But we had the first one was a drizzle cake. Yep. Mm-hmm. We wanted to make a drizzle cake. Technical challenge was Jaffa cakes.
Yes.
Yeah, I love a Jaffa.
Wow. And the showstopper was a mirror glaze cake. Mm. So we'll start with drizzle. Drizzle is, as I imagine it, a sponge with a drizzle that is oozing on inside the cake.
I would say absolutely, and the secret to a drizzle is your sponge has to be capable of taking a soaking. It's a bit like using the wrong biscuit to dunk in your tea. You might want it, but it might not be able to take it.
Don't dunk a sponge finger
into a cake. It just doesn't work. So the structure of your cake has to be strong enough to take a soaking, and you know, people tend to go for an alcohol, and if it's wrong, it's like acid, it dissolves. So structurally, your cake needs to be sound. Over dunk it, again, you put too much drizzle through it, it becomes heavy and a pudding. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So there was one last night.
It became a dessert.
Yeah.
Mm. So it's simplicity, but keep it smart. You know, don't overdo it. Every ingredient has got a job to do. You know, if you're putting almonds in the cake, they're really good for taking on moisture. Think about it. What can take on the things I'm trying to put in it? So, good one.
I think also, like on the bake-off, or anybody thinking about bake-off, if you're talking about a flavour in there, then it has to be tasted. Otherwise, don't say it. Mm. I know. I put something in, a biscotti I was making, and it had I put some orange in as well, but I never mentioned it. It was hazelnut and chocolate chip biscotti. And Paul said, oh, there's just a back note of orange there, which I was delighted with. It was there, but it wasn't in the title because I didn't want it. So if you're making a drizzle cake and you want it to be lemon, then it's got to be lemon.
Mm.
You know, like the Ujime, what's it?
Uber.
Uber tack, yeah. The Uber thing. Is it lemon or lime?
Yeah. If it's both, put a lemon and lime in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's good to see new things come in.
It is. I'm
with it. The technical challenge was Jaffa cakes. Now, there are some things that I would never dream of making, but here we go. One of them, I didn't even know it was possible to make a Jaffa cake, and then making a Jaffa cake. Yeah. Have either of you ever made a Jaffa cake?
Well, I have, and I've made a big one. I made one like a dessert, and I made it about 8 inches across, and you had it in a slice.
Mm.
So that worked quite well. But of course, you know, even bought biscuits started out as homemade start with, and it's just that they get commercialised and we don't think they're possible to make, you know.
Any secrets of if someone wants to try and make a Jaffa cake? I have a friend who said, this is my challenge, I'm doing the technical bake from every single round. So
Jaffa cakes is a good one. And I think what I liked about it, Sandy, was the fact that it had three different elements. It had your sponge, you had to learn how to set a jelly effectively, and also you had to then have your chocolate finish. Now that was, for me, that was the one that was going to show who had a good underpinning knowledge of lots of different things. That was a clever one. And I don't know, Sandy, from your point of view, but the technical detail leaves a lot out, doesn't it? You can't see everything.
It does. You're working on your knowledge, you're working on whether you know this ingredient, whether you know this piece of baking, you know. So when it's something you do know, because of course it's such a leveller. I thought I'd be thrown by the technical challenge, but I wasn't, because it's such a leveller, because everybody in the room isn't sure. So, you know, we had to make these Arlette things, which was this reverse thing, which we're all in the same boat.
Yeah.
But a Jaffa cake, you get in your mind's eye what you see in a packet,
mm-hmm.
and you're thinking, right, I've got to replicate that. So when you've got a visual, it's a big help.
Yes, that's true. Yeah,
but the information is minimal, so it is, as Lisa says, it's relying on what you know.
Is the piece, because if you know, you get given this sort of half a recipe, don't you? You get given a few bits of ingredients and a few hints. Are there really gaps in it?
You've got your ingredients there, and it's all measured and weighed and things like that. So you know that you have got to use everything that's on that table somewhere. If you don't, you've missed something. But it will say, make a fatless sponge.
That's pretty basic, isn't it?
It doesn't say
with full cream. Yeah.
And it doesn't say fill 3/4. You've got to know. I can only fill the case so far because I've got to put some jelly in there.
I was talking to one of the tutors this morning, and one of the things I said, which when you've got a technical challenge, I can imagine the first thing people do is they want to get going. Top tip is whatever you get, stop, pause, read, think, plan the end before you start the beginning. If you think it wants to be this thick sponge and that much chocolate, you have to visualise the end. Everyone gets going at the beginning, and then somewhere towards the end, think, what's it going to look like? Too late.
You know. Yeah.
Think of the end before you start, and take time to stop and read. Even if you think the gun's gone off, time's really valuable.
The timing is sufficient. You know, every challenge is sufficient timing. They're not out to trick you. If they say 2 hours, you have got ample time in that 2 hours. If they say 3. So Lisa's right, you do read it first. And I remember really thinking one day, and I think it's on some sort of Twitter something or other, that I'm actually mouthing every word as I went through. Put the so-and-so, right, put the... And then I worked my way methodically through, and it was the best technical challenge I did.
Absolutely.
Because I just thought of the end.
One step
like your exam. Going back to exams, it's GCSE day today, isn't it? We're going back to exams. Read the question.
Yeah.
Read the question and read it again.
It's the first thing we say at the cookery school is... Particularly, I'm dyslexic and reading a recipe can be quite a challenge.
Yeah.
So I have to read it twice, thrice. I have to look through it. And then I say, there's a story in there and how are you going to get to the end? Read the story. People think, I'm going to make this. I think I know it. And then they look back and there's an orange on the table. Where was that? Because you didn't stop and read the story. Mm. A recipe is a story if you really take time to read it.
It is a story, yeah.
And the story that they develop for themselves at the end is the showstopper.
Yeah.
Which this week was mirror glaze cake. I've never made a mirror glaze, which seems baffling. How can something be so shiny?
I think there's lots of
different... I think Lisa will know more about this than me.
There's two mirror glaze techniques. Most went for the chocolate mirror glaze technique, and I think one went for the fruit technique. So one's with gelatin, and the other one was with the chocolate. And as its definition, mirror glaze is it wants to be shiny, it wants to be slick, it wants to look polished and finished. And it's a bit like not under-prepping your room before you decorate it. If you've not sanded down your walls, you're going to see all, the misbehavings of the first part. So make sure you've done your prep work. And then the mirror glaze, with the chocolate one particularly that they were doing yesterday, is if your mirror glaze is too hot, it's too thin. If it's too cold, it's too thick, and it leaves that kind of fudgy ripple effect. So you've got to know the right fluidity of what you're pouring, and based on how it's going to sit and flood. So the flooding is as it hits the top of the cake, it finds its way to the outside, and then it gently coats it. Lots of things can go wrong.
So can I ask you there, do you chill your cake? Is that the idea? Is that that you've got your mirror glaze at a certain temperature and your cake's cold?
Yeah, if your cake is cold, that's a good thing, but it might be a bad thing, because what if it stops halfway through? So do you need it to be, do you need it to be cold? Because the mirror glaze I'm using is quite thin, and to get it thin, I need it to start stopping at some point. So predominantly, yes, you would chill your cake, because coldness helps it start to stop on its way down.
Right.
If you don't make enough mixture, it floods and it looks like a paint pot that hasn't quite gone down properly.
Yeah.
It's got the top and it's run out of energy for the side, so you need twice as much than you really need, because it's got the top and the sides to do.
So there isn't a mathematical formula. It needs to be this many degrees and your cake needs to be this cold.
That's called craft and artisan, and that's the whole... There are things that help you. So one of the chocolate courses we do is where they make a lovely glaze to go on a chocolate cake, is we put glucose in it, and glucose is an invert sugar, and it helps things move. If you just melt chocolate, it stops as it changes temperature. Mm. So it's putting something in that will continue the fluidity. And that's what glucose will do in a vegetable shortening. Can go in a mirror glaze. It gives you the shine.
So that's the same sort of thing when I've used mouldable chocolate to make like a chocolate flower. I've sometimes put either glucose, if I hasn't, I put some golden syrup in.
Perfect.
You know, same sort of thing to get it pliable. Or if I put chocolate on top of a cake, rather than have that chocolate that's brittle, if I've buttercreamed it or something like that, if I put some golden syrup in it, it gives it more of a bit fudgy, just so that your knife goes through there. So it's obviously based on that kind
Absolutely.
Of concept.
It's like, what, again, it's what do I need it to finish like? If I need it to move and flow, if you just melt chocolate, we all know after a while it just stops, it sets. Mm. So you want it to go further and travel further. So, and then the gelatin one, so the strawberry mirror glaze that I think Celeste did maybe on the top of his. Again, that's another technique as well. So it's having the right amount of gelatin and cooking it off so it doesn't look cloudy. So, yeah, it's quite a good one, I thought, to have that in because that does, again, show ability.
Yeah.
And I think it's like Paul said last night, which was a good point. He made some good points last night, did Paul, actually, bless him. Was that don't necessarily go for elaborate, enormous things.
Yeah,
you know?
He said...
Sort of less is more.
Mm.
Yeah, that's my theory. That's my theory on my face, really, less is more.
Less it's cake, less, where more is definitely better.
Definitely, you know, less more. Is more and more a winner.
If you can have you know. Quality and quantity, well, that's just
well,
the
that's,
best.
That's just absolutely. The best all over, yeah. isn't
Don't
it?
Don't stop.
Yeah.
Do we know what the theme is for next week?
Biscuits. I don't know.
Is it biscuits?
Well, if it's anything like, yeah, that was the same. I wonder if it runs the same running order as I was like, biscuits, that was my big week.
Yeah.
For me last year, that was my biggie.
Right. Well, we look forward to hearing all about your biscuits next week. We'll be back same time and we'll do all this again, but with biscuits. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
The Bake Off Review with 2015 contestants Sandy Doherty and Betty's Cookery School.